You look perplexed over there. What's going on, man?
All right, so my players used a genie to get a wish because they wanted to go on vacation to a city, and I can't come up with it on the fly. I just don't know what to do, how to build this thing. I'm at a complete loss.
It sounds like no, Jim. This is easy. It sounds like you just need a bard and an earth elemental.
I'm not following you. I'm not following you.
Well, I mean, that way you can build this city on rock and roll. On WebDM.
This episode is brought to you by Dungeon Fog, the online map maker and authoring tool for game masters. Save yourself hours of time generating awesome maps of buildings, rooms, dungeons, and more with GM notes. And share, print, or export them with just a few clicks. They just got a big new update with a ton of new improvements, including duplicating and rotating rooms and levels, and dynamic lighting that passes through windows and doors. It is really cool, folks. There's free, on-demand, and subscription access options, so go make a map today. Link in the comments and description.
So, Jim.
Yeah.
Let's build a city together.
Let's do it.
But like, why? I mean, why should we consider this? Why shouldn't it just be like there's a city with some walls? Like let's take a walk down the lane that we're about to build.
Yeah. So I think like compared to dungeons or wilderness, cities in role playing games are like there's so much more going on. Right, a dungeon sort of like self-contained. There's the rooms, there's the corridors that connect them, and while you can make the rooms interesting and engaging, and even the corridors, don't neglect them, but it's separated and contained, even in a living dungeon. And sort of wilderness is the same way. There's these sites, these locations that you go to, and then the places in between. Maybe you run into something. Maybe you've got like rather complex, encounter and event tables or something that you roll on. But for the most part, the locations for adventure are far apart and relatively separate. Whereas with an urban campaign or a city, like there could be three or four adventures in one location, and right next door are three or four adventures. And like on even just one street, there could be enough going on to fuel an entire year's worth of gaming, if not more. And so because of this, like the saturation of information and hooks and possibilities, it's easy to go like overboard with it. It's easy to get overwhelmed by the amount that you would need to prepare for, or that you feel pressure to prepare for. And so I think it really, really is one of those things, more than dungeons, more than wilderness, more than like a kind of travelogue style campaign. It's like, really consider, what is this city for? What am I going to use it for at the table? And what is it that I want it to accomplish? Because you can go like super abstract and the city is just like a list of descriptors and then the one place that you need for that moment of game. Or you can go like way concrete and have this like multi-tiered approach where, yep, you know everything that's going on in this city. It's a living, breathing entity. It exists outside of the session when you prep and are rolling dice to see what's happening and what's going on that week. And so like you really can set yourself up for success by building in game structures and procedures, which will then give you the confidence and base to improv, because you're going to have to improv in a city. There's no way, no sane way to have everything already mapped out. So you're giving yourself tools to create something that's like more than just a travel guide. It's like a living place. And it's worth it. City campaigns are great. You can do an entire, 1 through 20 sort of campaign in one location, and they can really get to know it. So it's very satisfying, but it's not the easiest thing to prep for as a DM. Mm-hmm.
And like you said, if you want to get really concrete with it, you're going to need some rebar in there for some support.
Yes.
And I think that support should be like one of the first things you think of, which is what is the purpose of this city? Like why? Yeah. Like what are you building this for? So let's start. Mm-hmm. Let's start walking through that. Like what would be the purpose? And like when you're building a city, where do you start?
Yeah. So the purpose for me is like I want to know what it is that I'm trying to accomplish in the game. And sometimes, like, the city is just a stop along the way. You don't really, mm-hmm. you're not going to sit there and do a lot of, you know, do a lot with it. Maybe it's a one shot or something that you're not really going to spend too much time. The city is like a background or a backdrop for this particular adventure. And it's just a dash of color, a dash of flavor. You know, you don't need that many things for it, in which case you don't mm-hmm. need a lot of prep. You know, you just don't need a lot. And I think maybe the temptation there is like, well, it's a city. All this stuff could happen, and oh man, I could do this and that and the other. And it's like, well, you really just need the one thing out of it, so don't go overboard.
The adventurers were sent out because, you know, this city provides all the wheat, and now all the brewers in the big city are having a shortage, and that's all you really need to know about that city out there, right?
Right, I mean, right.
It could be just like that.
Yeah, it could just be like that, yeah. And so you don't necessarily, like I said, you don't necessarily need a lot. Now, for a longer-term style mm-hmm. game, where the city is the focus of the campaign, it's almost a character in and of itself, you really want to set that up. Like, you really want to create a variety of procedures and structures and information for yourself that will help you both improv and bring the place to life, right? Because one of the things about a city that I like when I'm a player is when it feels real, is when it feels like I could just go off in any direction and like get into trouble, find something to do, talk to somebody. And, you know, you can't do that in a dungeon unless you bring a miner's pick or a bunch of, you know, shape earth and pass wall style spells. And you can do it in a wilderness, but just be honest, most of the wilderness is empty. There's not much there. So,
Yeah, I mean, you passed a few more trees. There's some shrubs in this area.
Right. 3 days later, you see some game animals and, you know, like, that's it. But, you know, like I said, one street of a city, there could be a year's worth of gaming in. And so, like, preparing mm-hmm. yourself for that, because it's worth it to bring that city to life. And so using, you know, if you're going to play long term, building those things for yourself is going to be important. Regardless, like, the other thing to consider when you're thinking of the purpose of it is, like, is this supposed to be, like, how does it fit in your world, rather? Like, how does it mm-hmm. embody something about your world that you want to display? Is there significance to the location? Even if it's for a one-shot, like, why this place? Why this city? What makes it unique? yeah. So, like, I'm thinking like this. You know, in our NPC show, when we're talking about, like, evocative NPCs and what makes those memorable NPCs, there's something unique about them. There's the one thing that you can use. And I think it's the same with a city, right? Like, what's the one unique thing? You know, if you're going long term, you want more than that, but you start with that one thing. Is this a city built near a waterfall? Is this a flying city that's crashed and now they're rebuilding? Is this, you know, a city that's like, you know, humans on the surface and subterranean, you know, cultures in the, you know, in the tunnels? Like, what is it that sets this city apart and that you can use as a shorthand to describe this to the players? Oh yeah, this is the Iceberg City because it's and on an iceberg, or
it's on an iceberg,
you know, it's on an iceberg, or this is the Canyon City, or this is the city at a planar nexus, or whatever it is, something short and something sweet. And ideally it ties into the fantasy elements of the game. And then, you know, the other thing to consider, and this is really more for long-term style cities, is like, are you going to build this thing from the top down or the bottom up? Are you looking for to understand the city as a whole from the get-go, all of its institutions and functions and districts and everything? Or are you just going to, like, have an idea for all of that and really focus on one place and then grow it out from there? So, like, an example of this would be the Street of Spells. This is a campaign I've run several times, both on stream and off, where it literally takes place on one street. And this is the street in a city where they sell spell components. You can buy scrolls, you can buy things to fill up your spell component bag, arcane foci, and then it's like the secondary sort of arcane services that there might have, alchemists, scribes, the bar that, you know, all the wizards go to when they're not, you know, engaging in spell research or something. And so I, you know, that was my idea for it. I had really no idea, you know, what else was there in concrete terms. And then I prepped like three locations there. the tavern, the house and location of a patron, and then the location of a supporting NPC. And then from there, having an idea of like, okay, this is the general character of the street. These are three specific locations that I'm going to use in the very first adventure. And I have an idea of who else might be there if I need to come up with an NPC on the fly. But that's it. You know, I'm not doing much else because I want to like make my prep as efficient as possible. And as the campaign grows, I'm going to add more to it, And then it will develop organically as opposed to like, this is the way it is all over. And we're not going to deviate and change from, you know, from this macro perspective. So yeah, that's how I like to do it.
I do both, like, but as a counterpoint, the way I developed a city in my Spelljammer game, Nero's Gates, which is, it's kind of like the Rock of Gibraltar a little bit, if there were two of them and then an arch connecting them, but yeah, there's a pass that this thing protects, but I was just like, what would a city look like if it was established by, like, basically like a pirate captain and his armada and a bunch of dwarves? Like, what would that look like? And where it's just like there are steps built into the rock where there's levels of the city so that, you know, each level has its own unobstructed view of the ocean. Everybody, like, there's complete purpose in everything that is built and ways of getting around that is mostly like sailors, because there's all these like pulley systems to get to different levels, not elevators. Literally, you grab a rope and you literally get yanked levels, up to the next level, because they were like, well, it works. And so, like, thinking about it, like, how would this city be established and be built, but we're hundreds of years later, as that being the starting point, I found immensely satisfying to create a city like that, like extrapolating from an idea. And you know, probably the second thing I made after just making the general layout was just like, how is it run? It's a captain's council, because, you know, that's how it should be set up. After that, it's all just purpose. And that's what I love about this game. Is there are multiple ways to come to a final conclusion. Yes. But you have to know why you're getting, like, why you're taking the path you're taking. Right. And so...
And to build on that, like, it's not even that you have to pick one way of doing it, one style of doing it, and stick to it, right? You can do a mix, you know, and they're going to reinforce each other, right? If knowing the bottom-up approach, the locations you need to prep for your game, that's going to be informed by the top-down approach. Because if it's a highly regimented city, then, you know what? That's going to inform the decisions you make from the bottom up. Another game I've run, and this is a city I've used many times, is Middenheim from Warhammer. And I've probably run that particular city in three or four separate games, maybe. Mm-hmm. And understanding, like, the conflicts, the districts, the wards, sometimes it's set after the Storm of Chaos. Sometimes I'm not dealing with any of that, you know. And
we don't need that.
Right. And, you know, in a game like The Enemy Within, having a macro perspective is going to be important, because this is about, like, dealing with court intrigue and what's going on at the highest levels of power. Whereas running, like, a low-level street gangs dealing with Skaven and the sewers game is like, I need two or three buildings, a couple of NPCs, you know, that kind of thing.
We just need a bar.
You just need a bar, right? And in that sense, you know, you guys as the players created that during our intro session. So yeah, these are all things to consider before you actually, like, sit down brass tacks and start prepping this thing and creating stuff for yourself. The kind of prep that you want to do, sort of creating this city itself, you know, they build on each other. You know, things you're going to use for a short-term kind of game you can build up into the more long-term stuff. And so that's why I like a bottom-up approach, because it grows organically. You know, you prep what you need, and then it will go from there. Mm-hmm. And so, like, really the first thing that I think of when I think of a short-term approach is, like, am I going to map this thing, or am I not? You know?
Oh, my God. Yeah, I'm right there with you, Jim. Mostly, I when I start to map a city, I'm like, I just suck at drawing, and that's what usually discourages me the most.
I'm no good as well, but I don't care about that. I understand where you're coming from. You know, I understand, like, there's a certain style of city drawing and city mapping that if that's not you, then you might think like, oh God, this is terrible. Guess what? No one else has to see it. No one else.
So
it could be a bunch of scribbles.
Yeah. Personal baggage aside, what should our DM perspective and current DMs think about when they're thinking about mapping a city and whether or not to?
Yeah. So for like a short term game, honestly, a map isn't needed. It could be useful. You might gain some benefit from it. But if you're literally just like, we're going to do one session in this place, then all you really need is a map of the locality and a general idea of layout so that you can give a description of the place. You know, this is a kind of thing where I'm probably just going to do like a word map or something where it's just sort of, you know, take a piece of paper and, you know, gatehouse, you know, guards are lax, big backup getting into the city. Okay. Market square, bustling. It's a market day, you know, yada, 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 pickpockets rampant. And then adventure location. And then I'll have a detailed map, NPCs, things like that. But those other locations are just there to quickly get through them. We're not worried too much about like what's going to happen if the players stop there. Presumably this is something where they know where they're going and they're making a beeline towards it. Now they might surprise you and catch you off guard, in which case, you know, stay tuned for the rest of the episode to figure out how to deal with that. But
well, those initially just shouldn't be so lax.
They really shouldn't be. Why are they lax? Yeah. And so, you know, you don't need one. It might be helpful to have one, but, you know, I wouldn't worry too much about it. Just an abstraction and enough to give the city, an evocative description. Is what you'll need there.
Okay, so whether or not they want one, hey, we'll see. But what are the essentials though for a short term game? What do you actually need?
Right.
For that city?
For what you need for that city, I'm focusing on the adventure location more than anything. You know, that's going to inform, you know, how I describe the place, what sort of, you know, buildings and streets and alleyways, landmarks that the players are going to run into. And for this case, I want like something really solid and really evocative. And even if they don't branch out into the rest of the city, this little place I know a lot about. And, you know, it could be that I'm, you know, I'm running something that's like a front for a cult or something, that I know how they operate, who their connections are within the neighborhood, how they stay hidden, who is it that might run interference for them, what groups might not like them there. And that applies for a lot of things, you know, a lot of faction-based plays, like how does the faction function in this locality? How does the bad guy organization get around and maneuver in this one place? By focusing on that one location, you don't have to worry about how they operate in the rest of the city, what the rest of the city thinks of them or whatever. You just really like you need to know the information just to run this adventure. And so like brief descriptions, and I take a lot of inspiration from like actual city travel guides. Right. Like, find a real world city that you want to be inspired by. And maybe you just read those descriptions, like you don't even change them. You just like, oh, yeah, my, you know, this city is based on like Budapest. So I'm just going to find a travel guide to Budapest, and just like read that and get a sense for the city, at least be inspired by it, change the names, file the serial numbers off. But that's like going to save you a ton of time. And usually those descriptions are really evocative and they're really, you know, they're trying to get like actual travelers to go there and spend actual money. So they have a sense of just vibrancy and they're usually focused on things you can do, right? Like if you're a tourist, that's sort of what the tourist guides and the travel guides are there for. So that's the style I'm going for. And I will completely rip off real world travel guides just to save myself time.
I'm just imagining a fan out there watching this video who's a travel agent who's been working up the courage to actually DM, and they hear you say that and go, this is my moment. I've arrived.
This is my moment. I can do this. Like, yeah, you can, man. So once I've got the feel of the city, right, like the local color, move on to key NPCs. And these are short, sweet, don't need a lot there. Maybe, you know, the antagonist, the major ally, and then a third, you know, sort of wild card. And then any other NPCs I'm going to generate on the fly, or just keep generic, right? Generic city guard captain, generic tavern owner, generic street urchin, you know, things like that. And I would consider those like three essential NPC archetypes for a city: street urchin, guard captain, tavern owner, shopkeep, you know, something like that.
It gives you a good
The authority is someone you can talk to. Exactly. What kind of shop are they going into? And then you modify it a bit. You have an idea in your head of what they're going to be like, but you also keep it loose enough that you can change things based on the actual situation. The other thing I'm looking for are like landmarks and locations. A landmark is really important for a city. It gives the players something to latch onto, a sense of reference towards where they're going. And in a short-term game, it creates a very evocative location. Is this centered around a statue that's like a hero of the city or something? Is it centered around a, sort of like some kind of market or something like that, where they deal with like one thing? This is the butcher's market. You know, you got some of that, you got some of that sweet basilisk meat going on. This is where you would sell it. This is where they butcher it, you know.
I want some cockatrice hot wings. Can't look at them.
You can't look at them. You don't want to mess with them. Don't worry about that beak.
Just cockatrice beak soup.
But
what I love about that is even in a short, like in a short term game, like we're talking about, it is a window to something deeper, to a lore, to give it some credence. And if they want to seek out more info about it, it's a way for a DM to give an opportunity. Well, what's the statue all about? And now you finally as a DM get to, oh, let me break open my book. Give you a little bit of a lore dump.
There's a placard or some like crazy old person sitting around who's going to talk your ear off about it. Or maybe there's like a programmed illusion that shows up. A literal travel guide. This is why I like using monsters in my cities, because they can kind of sit on the outskirts. They don't have to be like super integrated into it, but they could be there to like impart some of that lore or that local color. Like, why are there a lot of mephits in this place? Well, you know, maybe ask somebody, talk to one of them. So that's going to be like landmarks, locations, make it memorable.
They are dust mephits. They used to be normal mephits until they became chimney sweeps, and now they're dust mephits.
Right. Now they're dust mephits.
That's how dust mephits are created.
Exactly, right? That's how they're created. Dust mephits are created when a chimney sweep urchin gets caught. They just breathe in too much dust, and now they're dust mephit. Smoke mephit barbecue is another one that I've used.
Oh my god. Smoke come from barbecue. Dwarven barbecues.
And that's all you need. Like, that's it. Three words, a little concept, something, you know, the players will run with it. You can riff off of their speculations and what they like, and really, you know, this is the opportunity to like flex and exercise those improv skills without being like super committed to something. Everything else about it is points back to the adventure. Events, random encounters, whatever, they're pointed back to the adventure. Rumors, hooks, whatever, pointed back to the adventure. The goal here is to like keep play focused on the goal, which is presumably short term. We're just going to get in and get out. But you're also setting yourself up for having a solid base of operations if they do want to stay and branch out to a more longer term game.
Oh, most definitely. So in a longer term game, and we're going to start with the maps again. In a long-term game, and a map is, I'm not going to say it's essential, but it certainly does help keep players rooted and on target.
Yes. Oh, yeah. Yeah, it gives you a sense of, like, where they are in the city and what they're doing. Because, like, a long-term city campaign, like, because there's so much going on, it's easy to get like lost in the details of it. So having like multiple maps, right? Like, this is how I like to do it. I've got like a big overall layout. What does this thing look like from the top down? This would be like a traditional city map with like the districts demarcated from each other and labeled. And I don't go so far as to get individual buildings on this. I might outline different blocks of, you know, of a neighborhood or a district or something. But the goal here is to just have something of a general layout that is less like literal and more abstract, or at least relational, right? So like the big landmarks might go on the city map. And this might be something mm-hmm. I literally show the players so that they can go like, oh, well, what, this is the major temple. Okay, that's that. This is the barracks for the city guard. This is the Archmage's Tower. And we're sort of triangulated in the middle of that so that they know. You can just say like, oh, yeah, well, it's towards the tower, or it's towards the barracks, or it's towards the temple. And that gives a better sense of like where they are in the city than going like, well, you walk down this street east and then turn north and whatever. Well, you can just, you know.
Well, that is the great debate amongst people in giving directions. Do you give them the go east for two blocks, then right, you know, or it's like, no, go down to the temple and you hang a left. If you get to the dogmatic temple of Agra or whatever, you went too far.
You went too far. You got to double back.
Yeah. So yeah, keep it loose. You know,
keep it
trying
loose.
To get to the Sonic like, here,
right? And an idea of like what it's like to travel in that direction. Maybe traveling towards the temple, the layout of the streets gets more organized, and the mm-hmm. buildings there become grander and grander, and the streets cleaner and cleaner. But like as you go towards the Archmage's Tower, like the streets become like a warren of alleyways and footpaths and things like that. The buildings are older, kind of like hang over on top of each other. Parts of it, like you can't even see the sun as like the buildings have basically touched each other and you're walking through a makeshift tunnel underneath them. It's a complete mm-hmm. tangent. Look up the Snickle Ways of York, right? The city that's in northern England, the Snickle Ways, or the sometimes called the Shambles, or the part of it is called the Shambles, which is, I didn't know, was the name of an open air butcher's market. And it's these footpaths and alleyways and like,
oh yeah,
a tangle of streets that have like shops and little things along them, but they're really sort of bring to life like what a medieval city looked like, because medieval cities were, they had no concept of layout or districts or, you know,
cars,
you know, that kind of thing. It's just throw it all in there and it'll sort itself out, which is why most of them were raised in modern times to create nice boulevards and straight lines and things like that.
So but you can't be claustrophobic living there, like, for sure.
No, you cannot be. It's going to be crowded, it's going to be smelly, it's going to be nasty. And so like having an idea of that as they walk around this place on an abstract level is going to be helpful. You want to take it to the next tier. Now we're talking about a district point crawl. This is the literal sort of like gamified layout of the city, and might be the one you spend the most time using. So you can take like the district by district approach, where you know, building off our example of like, this is the temple district, this is the Archmage's district, this is the barracks district, and like maybe between them are two or three other districts. Depending on how big you want your city to be, you might have dozens, you might have, you know, less than 10 or so. Maybe if it's a rather small city, there's just like three districts. And understanding like how they connect to one another, how long it takes to move between them, what kind of events or encounters might the party stumble upon as they're going between those locations. And mm-hmm. in the same way that like a dungeon map has discrete rooms and corridors that you move along, that's essentially what you're doing for your city. It's understood that they could go left when you thought they were going to go right and venture into the trackless wilderness of the alleyways and the like. But these are the well-known paths between locations, landmarks, right? And thinking of your districts as centered around landmarks is going to be really helpful, because then you can keep referring to things by either directions or relations between landmarks. But this gives you a solid, like, gamified way of figuring out how they move about the city. It's going to take you an hour to get across there. Well, now the players know, well, I'm not going to cast a 10-minute spell, you know, to get between the two locations. I'm going to wait a bit. Or, yeah, you think it's going to take 10 minutes to get there, but it looks like there's a guild procession that's going by, and that's going to, like, who knows when they'll be done. There's a lot of pageantry. It's a lot of pride in the guild.
Or they're having, it's time for the pilgrimage to the temple district, so do not get on the main boulevards today, you know.
No,
having god parades.
And it's the celebration. It's the new coronation of the monarch. It's it's Remembrance Day or something, you know. And in that way, you can portray the impact of these events in the city in a way that's more than just, oh, yeah, it takes you a long time to get there. Like, you can actually make it part of the crawl through the city, right? The dungeon, like a city crawl, an urban crawl, is where you start getting into. And then within a district, I will make a street by street, not quite individual buildings, but maybe layout of the city. So for like the Street of Spells, I had like the main thoroughfare and then every other main thoroughfare that branched off from that. So like talking like six or so streets that have names, right? This is the Street of Familiars. This is Owl's Way, whatever. Mephit Corner. And then in between those and the what's in like the nitty gritty, the alleyways, the sort of off the beaten path kind of places, those still remain abstract until the players get to them and I make them concrete. And that way I'm not like really burdening myself with a ton of stuff, but I'm giving myself the option to build out as I go. I know where everything is in this. I know how to, present this and how it's going to look, what it's going to look like. And at some level it becomes a dungeon crawl. Like if you want to run it that way, right? You're walking down the street, you've come to an intersection between these others. You know that your place is over here that you want to go to, but it looks like the bad guys that you were chasing went a different way. Do you want to go here? Do you want to go there? You're going to find a different way. Can you cut them off? That sort of thing. And I'll be honest, I use a die drop for this. I'll take a handful of dice, blank page, assign various variables to the dice, maybe D6s are this, D4s are this, and then the number that comes up is going to be like the state of the building, you know. How many stories it has. Yeah, there's all sorts of things. What is it dilapidated? Is it being renovated? Is it nice? Is it busy there? Codifying those details and then just dropping the dice on a piece of paper, noting where their locations are, and like figuring out how you want to, arrange all of that. Let's drill down to the essentials here. In terms of districts, there are an amazing number of resources online which can give you beyond exhaustive lists of what sort of districts there are. We've mentioned it many times, but the Reddit r/D100 has a ton of resources for this, including lists of every sort of building you might find in a district or a city, lists of every kind of district you might find, or the questions you might want to ask yourself about those districts. All of that is fodder for you to use. Don't feel like you have to come up with these exhaustive lists yourself or that you need everything that's in there, but having an idea. Is this a military district? Is this a place where like the patrols are more common because this is where the militia hangs out, or this is where like the Queen's army is barracked, and so law and order there is pretty tight. It's not like a lot of stuff's going on unless you're a soldier, in which case it's a wealth of adventure opportunities and contacts and things like that. Getting a feel for what that district's like in terms of its like color, its description. Is this sort of like the cultural enclave within a city? Is this where all the elves live within the city? And it's like distinct from the others. Street of Spells, one end is the theater district, where there's a lot of just theater that goes on, like necromantic shadow plays or sort of like dwarven ancestral epics. And then the other end of the Street of Spells is Goblin Town, which is like a big pile of jumbled, tumbled buildings and the warrens underneath them, and it kind of like rises like a ramshackle, rickety mountain over the surrounding neighborhoods. And like being able to distinguish between those as they move between districts. What's the feel like? What's the color like? That's going to be informed by the type of district it is. And it's also going to be informed by like the features that it has. Multiple landmarks within a single district is going to be handy in the same way that like landmarks for a district itself are a good way to navigate around the city. Landmarks within a district are going to be a good way to navigate within that district. And so it's like a multi-tiered onion, right? Or multi-layered onion, definitely. Right? Each level has the same things, but more, and it goes from abstract to concrete the more you drill down. Peel away the layers, not to mix my metaphors.
I think it's okay to mix metaphors. It's a city. There's a whole lot going on. Because one thing that I usually try to think about, and I'm not sure what this says about me, but like when it comes to like waste management, if we're talking about a city, how do they get rid of their waste? And I mean like physical waste, like we're doing things and now there's trash, and also personal physical waste. Like, because that's going to inform, like, one thing I think of all the time is in the Song of Ice and Fire books, you know, like King's Landing and the streets right outside the keep. And those are like the worst places to live. You know, that's like the flea bottom. That's like, you know, there's refuse rolling down the streets itself. Like, do you have that? Or if this is fantasy, I mean, obviously you got dwarves, you're going to build sewers. Now what's down there? Like, because that just opens up like so many more avenues for adventure, literally, because who doesn't love a good sewer adventure?
Who doesn't love a good sewer adventure? An anachronistic sewer adventure. But this is where I find, like, answering those questions, where do they go? Where does the waste go? How do they produce food? How do they transport goods around the city? What's the labor like? Who like, actually does things here?
Yeah.
That's where you can, like, start introducing the fantastic. My cities, there's a lot of conflict between the dwarven, dwarven ancestral labor clans and the, like, goblin union guilds. And so you get down into the sewers, and like the goblins are authorized by the city to be down here, but you know, it's, what are they gonna do, gonna kick the dwarves out? So there's like a running conflict. Sometimes it's civil, and it's like, no, I got the permits. No, I don't think so, dwarf. I, you know, these, this is my contract that I have. Well, my contract goes back 2 centuries or whatever, you know.
You just clogged up the pipes.
Just clogged up the pipes. but I've had other things where it's like, this is a giant pit in a back alley that they throw their garbage down, because at the bottom of that pit is a gigantic gelatinous cube, like obscenely big, that they just feed things to all day. Or an audiog is another good one. This is a cesspit or a midden that a bunch of audiogs live in. You know, we keep them fed with the refuse of the city because we don't want them to get out. In the Street of Spells, this is all taken care of by gutter fairies and dung gnomes. You know, you keep your street clean, you keep your alleyway clean by leaving out like a little pint of beer and some sausages. And at night, the dung gnomes come out and they sweep it all away and they take care of it. And if you didn't pay, then they'll just leave it all on your doorstep and throw the shit all over your windows. And the gutter fairies aren't going to clean it out either. And everybody just knows that, like, you're nice to the urban fairies because they keep this place running. They're like the invisible workforce that works for treats and kind words, or the like. Or maybe you have automatons, like golems or warforged or whatever, clockwork type creatures that do this. But like, thinking about this will give your district color and description and like a vitality. And by like mixing in the fantasy stuff here, you're making it more than just like a faux medieval, but really it's kind of modern style city that you see a lot of.
Yeah, most definitely. Who's working the Favor app now, or Uber Eats?
Right. Yeah. Who's doing? Is it all these wizard familiars are flying through the air, running errands, or something like that? Or this is where the Sphinx holds court in their to judge people or to air grievances. Mm-hmm. People just come up and complain to it. The next sort of essential thing for a district is key NPCs. And this is where checking out our show on NPCs can be really helpful, because we'll like give you a lot of tips on bringing those to life. But who are the movers and shakers in a district? Who's if you need some money, who do you go to? If you're in trouble, who do you go to? If you need something special, some kind of piece of equipment or something, gear that's kind of specialized, who do you go to? If you need magical healing, is there someone around who can offer that? Did one of your party members die and you don't have the ability to raise them from the dead? Is there someone in the district who can perform that for you? And so, like, thinking in terms of services and things that players need, you know, in the course of the game, the kinds of things that they need, as opposed to the more travel guide style, here's the leader of the place, here's the, you know, shop owners and the like. You have an idea for those, but the focus here is on what it is that players are more likely to run into. Who are they there to see? Who will they seek out? And really spend some time detailing those. I don't know who those are. I don't know your players. I don't know your game. But I bet you know. I bet you have an idea of what your players like and who they'll go talk to.
Most definitely. And like we've already mentioned before, you know, this is why you want to have, you know, rumors and hearsay on the street. Because that can point to these NPCs. It doesn't have to point to a specific building or area. It can be maybe this NPC, like you said, the Sphinx, is holding court this weekend. So, you know, it's going to draw a lot of people to the town center. And so, but, you know, maybe some people aren't happy about that. And that's where you have different kinds of factions. Maybe the Thieves Guild doesn't want to get judged this weekend. Who knows?
Right. One of their members is going to air a grievance and you got to stop them, or they want them stopped, or you want to protect them.
He's going to turn snitch.
He's going to turn snitch, right. Stool pigeon. factions are, to me, the beating heart of a lot of D&D, and they work less well for wilderness adventures. They work great for mega dungeons, but like urban campaigns is where they really shine. What are the social institutions of this place? What guild structure does it have? Are they all artisanal? Is, you know, and in that sense, there is no end to the amount of artisanal guilds you can have. Part of the, you know, the way that medieval production and labor goes is that it's broken up into very discrete things. I just make this one thing. And then I make it, and somebody else comes and gets it, and it goes to this other place. It's not like a, you know, a factory system or a place where it's all integrated. They're competing with each other. They have secret knowledge of how to do things, right? This is why the Masons become the Freemasons, is because building shit out of stone requires very specialized knowledge, and they leverage that. They keep it a secret. So, you know, this might be that each type of magic school has their own guild. It's not just that there's a mage's guild, but it's like there's a diviner's guild, a transmuter's guild, an evoker's guild, you know, not just a thieves guild, but a pickpocket's guild, a beggar's guild, a burglar's guild. Think of it in those terms. Like, the more specific you can get, the more niche you can get, the more you have to play with. Not everything needs to be that way, but you can really benefit from having sort of like competing interests that are in the same broad category. So like Thieves Guild, breaking that up gives you multiple types of competition between subgroups and factions and whatever. Like, you know, they might all pay homage or respect to the big boss, but individually they are at each other's throats. So factions
and
are
don't go to the Grifters Union.
Don't go to the Grifters Union. Everybody knows that the Beggar King really controls things around here. you need to know information, then the people you talk to are the street people, the urchins, that kind of thing. And the point of factions is to provide structure and organization for the interactions with NPCs, as well as a source of conflict. And because a city is defined by as much about its landscape and its layout as the social relations of a place, that like thinking in terms of those factions helps you establish the social relations.
One example I like to think of when thinking about factions and how they compete is that scene in Gangs of New York, where the firefighters are coming to save the house, except the other ones show up and they're like, hey, this is our district. And like they have an argument while a house is burning and being looted, mind you. And that was all set up. and being looted, because the whole point of the conflict was so they could get in and steal stuff. And so, you know, you alert your pickpockets to go into this building because we're setting it on fire and we're going to delay the dwarves who are supposed to man this area, you know, with our goblin firefighters, so you can have more time to do that. Like thinking about that, and like that's that right there, that could be a whole adventure. You know,
I love Gangs of New York is a great inspiration for city campaigns, because it gives you an idea of what a pre-rational modern city looked like and felt like. Like, it's set in the 1860s, I think, late 1850s, 1860s, but like there's a lot about it that's very medieval, right? It's about patronage, mm-hmm. who you know, what the person you know, what they can get for you, right? And the blurring of the line between legitimate and criminal and you know, coercive and persuasive, that's all blurred and intermixed. That firefighter scene, there's factions that tie in to the firefighters. There's they have their own patrons, their own allied factions. You know, it's not just them in isolation. They both represent a tangled web of social relations that compass the entirety of different levels of the city in conflict with one another. And only this brief portion is in direct conflict. The others just have a controlling interest, a vested interest in this.
These events and encounters that get fueled, right?
Mm-hmm.
What are some ways to fuel them? Like how do you I'm getting at here is how do you hook them? How do you hook them into these encounters?
How do you hook them in? Yeah. They're, all of this is related. Events, rumors, hooks, encounters, they're all sort of play off of each other. Mm-hmm. I would start with a time scale, especially if you're dealing with like background events that are going to inform the state of the city but might not necessarily impact like play. Is there one, you know, are you rolling weekly, monthly, yearly?
Yeah.
If you're going all out, you do all three, right? And you'll have these intermixed. Like this year, the city's besieged. But in this particular month, it's a celebration of this thing. And then this week, this other thing happened. And so you have sort of a multi-layered approach. And then each of those can have their own set of hooks and rumors that will generate or offer possibilities for adventure. And then sort of mm-hmm. existing alongside that are location-based events, you know, so maybe this particular street or this particular neighborhood has its own table of events and encounters. Like the only way you're going to run into this type of person or this particular group of people or whatever is in this neighborhood. And you've embodied that in the encounter tables and in the, sort of inhabitants that you've prepared for that place. You know, it gives a character to the city if walking towards the temple district, you roll on one type of encounter table versus walking towards the Archmage's district, it's another type of encounter table. And we're talking small here. We're not talking big, exhaustive ones. We're talking like D6, you know, something that is not going to put too much of a burden on you, but it's going to be enough to portray the character of the city and make it like specific. And then you just have rumors and hooks that are tied back to your locations, your NPCs, your factions. Like to me, they're the last thing I prepare when I'm preparing a city or really anything is the rumors and the hooks, because I don't want to put something in that I thought was interesting, but then I never followed up with it. And then it comes up in play and I'm like, oh shit, I wasn't ready for that.
This doesn't really make sense.
This doesn't really make sense given how, you know, things have gone since there. So having them flow out of the things you've prepared, as opposed to like starting with them or coming up with them in isolation, mm-hmm. tying them into what you've actually got is going to signal to the players that if you don't know what to do, go look for rumors. And those are the adventures that we have. Bodies are disappearing. You know, well, maybe the bodies that are disappearing are the zombie labor for the Constructors Guild or whatever, you know. Their contracts run out and now some, you know, their rivals are really just trying to hit them where it hurts, kick them while they're down. There might be three mm-hmm. or four rumors associated with that, including ones that the party could just stumble on, ones to seek them out. That kind of thing. Another type of encounter I like to put in is just, this doesn't involve the players at all. It's just a thing that's happening, a fight. It's one of those, I've never, the complete tangent, I've never been to Boston where I haven't seen a street fight. And some of them have been like right in front of me, right? Like literally we have to jump out of the way of these fights. Well, I'm gonna get involved with them, but that I remember them. I remember them very well. They color my experience of the city. And it's one of those things now when I go to Boston, I'm just like, all right, where's the street fight? Like I'm who am I going to see brawl, right now? Yep. You know,
last Geek Bowl, we went there, which came out of a bar, looked down the street and there's two guys just drunkenly fighting.
Just fighting. Like, yep. There you go. All right. Now I know I'm in Boston.
But if your players walk out of a bar and they see the two heads of two guilds that they know about fighting in the street, like I said, that's an opportunity. Do you want to throw in on one side of that? You know, are you trying to garner favor with one of those guilds? Do you want to piss off another one of the guilds? Maybe that's the only reason you get in is because you're like, yeah, screw that guy. You know,
looking to expand your influence. Yeah, yeah. Weigh in on one side, yeah. And so, like, all of these things are designed to create an adventure. You really shouldn't be making anything that will not ultimately lead to an adventure. And be prepared for anything that you do introduce into the game that your players might think it's an adventure idea or an opportunity and then run with it. And so by keeping that in mind, you're going to create stuff for your game that's going to be really useful. You know?
So, Jim, what are some of the tools that you use to grease the gears of your city to keep it moving, to make sure that you stay on time with everything and make sure it makes sense in that there's you know, stakes involved.
Right, there are stakes. liberal use of countdown clocks. You know, when does something happen? What are the conditions under which this inches closer towards it happening? We've mentioned them before. A countdown clock is essentially like a pie chart or a literal clock that has maybe 4 to 8, usually 4, 6, or 8 sections. And then the DM just sort of like notes, what is it that fills up a section? And you're counting down to an event. So if it's, you know, one faction versus another, maybe we're counting down to when they brawl in the streets. Right, or when one of them takes over or something, or when one of them strikes back against the party, you know. So I'll make use of countdown clocks. That goes in conjunction with what I call a faction turn. These usually take place in prep, not necessarily at the table, but it's some kind of rubric for, you know, what the factions are up to in between sessions. My favorite is to assign a die size to a particular faction. The higher the die size, the more power and influence they have. Roll them all at once, and each numbers that come up, or each die that come up with the same number, that represents some kind of point of contact between those two factions. Street gang might be a d4, temple might be a d20, but if I roll a 4 on both of those, then there's something about the temple and the street gang that is connected for this moment. Mm-hmm. And I'll use that to fuel rumors, hooks, encounters, things like that. In this sense, your dice function as oracles. They tell you what's going on about your world and take some of the pressure off you to think up everything. And it becomes this sort of like, well, what is going on here? I don't know. And it kind of creates a game out of prep because you can sit there and sort of like, what's my city up to today? And then you literally consult the bones, your dice, your oracles to figure it out. And then, well, there's other tools like random tables. Our show on random tables goes into way more detail of it, but it's a good starting point. The best way to like make use of a nested table is in these urban campaigns, because there's a lot going on. You might not know who it is that you run into, why they want to run into you, that kind of thing.
I've said all I needed to say in the random tables episode.
So
as we take all this into consideration, Jim.
Yeah.
What are some final thoughts to keep in mind that our DM should keep in mind when it comes to building your city for your campaign?
Yeah. Questions to ask yourself as a DM. Mm-hmm. I'm really fond of this idea of the urban body, that systems and organs within a person's body make good metaphors for a city. And for the life of me, cannot remember. I cannot remember where I ran into this. This is not my idea. This is someone else's. But I do not have, I don't remember where I saw it. But it's things like brains. Who's in charge of this place? Are there multiple people? Mm-hmm. If something needs to happen, who makes that decision? The heart. What keeps the city vibrant, alive? What purpose does it have? It, you know, is it healthy? Is it in decline? Their stomach. What do they eat? You know, is this, you know, is this produced in the city, outside of the city? You know, what's the street food like? What are the kinds of things that you can give to the players to, like, let them interact with? Smoke Method Barbecue would be where that came from for me. So just like, that sounds like a fun thing to just like throw in, and something that a player might latch onto. The others are like muscles. Who does the labor? How do things actually get done? Your immune system. Who protects things? Who keeps things from changing? Is there a police force? Is it a guard? Is it up to each individual neighborhood to police themselves? Nervous system. How do they communicate with each other? How does news travel around the city? Is there some sort of centralized, you know, way that this happens, or is it more decentralized? What are the bones of a city? What's the history of it? Why this place? What is it that makes this physical location so important that they that a city grew up here? And then, like, blood. How do things circulate? How do goods move about the city? What's the infrastructure like? Digestive system. Where does all the waste go? Right. Mm-hmm. You know, are there sewers? Is it something else entirely? Do they shunt it all into a magic portal and then forget about it? And then centuries later, mm-hmm. a bunch of people who got tired of being crapped on by interplanar garbage come back and invade the city, you know? What's the reproductive system like? Right. You know, this is one of those things that, like, not a lot of people are comfortable with, but maybe your players are. But, like, what is the role of sex in this city? Is there prostitution? Is it regulated?
Yeah.
Final one is like gut flora, right? What's a part of the city and contributes to it, but is not like of the city? Are there outsiders here, outcasts, criminals, that kind of thing? And I find that's really conceptually interesting, because it reframes it from like, who runs the place, whatever. Like, thinking of it in terms of organs, for me at least, is very helpful, because the concepts aren't as literal as some other kinds of questions that you might have. But if you want to ask those style of questions, then you might be like, is the city walled? How is it protected? What kind of government does it have? Those are the more literal kind of questions that you ask yourself. And again, Reddit has a ton of questions and concepts to ask yourself there. Way more than, you know, we'd do like a 2-hour episode to cover them all. But yes. it's worth looking them up. And here, before we close out, I know we've gone maybe a little long with this one, but you know, it's a city, there's a lot going on. There are a couple of products, D&D products out there. Actually, they're not D&D, but they're very useful for D&D that you can use to inspire you. And the first one is Blades in the Dark. We've talked a lot about Blades in the Dark before, different things you could take from it. One of the things you can take from it is how they structure and portray Duskfall, the city, the default city that's set there. And it's a district by district, street by street, tons of random tables. Random tables are just like, what things might the players find here? What are the sights, smells, sounds, and the like that they could encounter? It's brilliant and is like inspiration fuel for your fantasy cities. The other one is a supplement for the Vagabonds of Dyfed, which is called Dortoka, the City on the Sea of Glass. And it introduces a procedural generation for cities. Now, Dortoka is a ruined city that's kind of this urban hellscape that the players adventure in. But you could easily reframe it to be just any sort of fantasy city. It's got tables for factions, districts, neighborhoods, what it looks like, who's there, that kind of thing. Both of those are highly, highly useful and not necessarily setting or system specific at all for, you know, using your D&D games.
I think we built a city.
I think so, but, yeah. It's worth it.
Not on rock and roll.
I was trying to figure out a way to work that in, and I knew you would come through.
Well, I mean, you know, it depends if you're running an all bard game or not, whether or not you build your city on rock and roll. So, you know.
Yes.